Welcome to Absolutely Necessary. I am your host, Logan Tracy, and Dad, if you're listening, I need a new Bronco jersey. Mine's no good no more. Joining me in studio today, Jackson Layer, Jacob Masick. How you guys?
Hello,
Oh my gosh.
Hello.
Anyway, we got a episode packed full of trade deadline news today. The NFL trade deadline has come and passed. Big players moved, big players didn't, and Brandon Marshall got released from the Seahawks.
Biggest news of the day.
And he still wants to play football. Let's put that out there. Brandon Marshall to the Cardinals, not ruling it out. They need a wide receiver.
Brandon Marshall, you'll always have a little respect in my heart from your days as a Bronco, but I think, you know, it might be time. But what do I know? I'm just some idiot college kid spitting my mind. Anyway, we'll jump right into the show. All we're going to focus on today is just the NFL trade deadline news. Jump right into it. First off, I'm going to ask you guys, did you think this was an entertaining deadline? As much movement as you wanted? Maybe a little more, maybe a little less?
I would say they hyped it up a lot for this year's deadline, that there was going to be a lot with teams either buying or selling. They have to make a decision at this point whether they're buying and selling. And then the winning teams, they thought, were going to buy a lot, especially teams like the Eagles, which did make a move. But I think they were expecting a bit more, especially in the running back category from them especially. So I would say, for me, just because of how it was hyped up less, but in terms of NFL trade deadlines overall, there was a decent amount of action at this deadline.
Yeah, I agree with Jacob completely here. I was a little bit disappointed about how my boy, DeSean Jackson, was not traded to the Texans, as my prediction was. However, I guess the teams that decided to keep their players kept their players. Like Le'Veon Bell, I was expecting something to come out of him, whether it be a trade or the Steelers getting word out of him. But from now, I don't know. I'm left wanting more. What more can I say?
Well, if Bell... obviously staying with the team, he didn't sign his tender, which means he couldn't be traded. That does show that he'll probably report to the Steelers this year.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't by, I believe, week 9, is it week 9?
Next week, yeah.
Yep.
He'll be forced to play in week 10. If he doesn't report by week 10, he'll be forced to play another year in Pittsburgh. And I think we can see that relationship is slowly eroding. It's James Conner's backfield right now, really, with the way he's been performing.
Yeah. I mean, how do you bench him? If Bell comes back, it seems like a bad situation there. And you have to think it's almost a shared backfield if Bell comes back, but that's just not how they operated with Bell. So it's a tough decision for them. If I was them, I would have went out and said, let's offer a sign-and-trade type of thing if Bell would want to go there, and talk directly with Bell and his agent and ask him where he wants to go, type of situation.
Wait, so would you say that James Conner would get the starting position over Le'Veon Bell at this point if Le'Veon comes back?
I would say I would have trouble benching James Conner at the rate he's producing right now, being at the age he is and with the contract he has. I'd say it's a huge thing. The Steelers are looking for cap space right now, especially since they're going to Juju is going to need a new contract. And I think they're going to try to get extra talent this year, and it would be great to have James Conner on contract for 3 more seasons with that option in the last season for way less money.
So you would go with James Conner over Le'Veon?
If he comes back in week 10, yeah.
Skip it.
I think what he's trying to say, and
is the contract, yeah.
Let me word it this way, okay. Is I don't think we're discussing whether or not Le'Veon Bell is a better player than James Conner.
Right.
It's all about value and building that team, and I think James Conner isn't even making $1 million a year.
No.
And with what Le'Veon's asking for, if you can get that cap flexibility, maybe get some reinforcements in on that defense for Pittsburgh, does that not help them become a better overall team than they are with Bell?
He's on a 4-year, $3,161,000 contract, so you're correct. He's not even getting $1 million per year, whereas Bell is getting paid $23 million just this year to play. So that frees up $20 million in cap space just during a season.
Moving on, let's keep talking about who didn't get traded. Along with Le'Veon Bell, the Giants stayed pat today. I know a lot of people thought they might be trying to move players, especially people like Janoris Jenkins, Landon Collins, whose contract's up after this year. They have a lot of talent, especially on that defense with some really standout players. Obviously, they traded Damon Harrison, who was a big part of that defense the last couple of years. Huge Giants guy. But now, where do you think they move? I'll start with Jackson. Do you think it was the right decision to choose to stay Pat today and not trade those players?
I guess if the Giants were planning on ditching on Eli Manning, I think that they would have made some moves. I believe that if you were planning on ditching your long-term quarterback in Eli Manning, you would be trying to build a team around the new quarterback, or just to, like, get like some fresh faces in the organization to start with that rebuild process that they're going to have to go through if they do indeed ditch Eli Manning. What surprises me a little bit is, of course, Janoris Jenkins. We were hearing a lot of rumors about him going to, especially the Eagles, I heard had interest in him. So that was kind of surprising to me that that didn't go through. However, the Giants, they're not in too good of a place, so I think that they should have made some moves during this trade.
Do you think they should have traded assets? Obviously, Manning probably wouldn't have gotten anything.
No.
Odell and Saquon are probably off the table in that case. Mm-hmm. So do you think it's right for them to burn those assets or wait till next year where they can possibly grab someone in the draft? Or do you just think at this point it's time to retool? Because I think that retooling might take... Okay, retooling, there's a difference between retooling and rebuilding, I would say, though, too. Yeah. But
oh, clearly, yes.
Retooling would be for, like, 2 years or a year or less. They might try to play for the draft and get some picks. But Saquon and Odell, 4 years? I think Odell will have 3 years and Saquon should have three with an option.
Yeah.
Because this was his first year. So you'll have them for that time, but you need to start winning soon and keep them happy in New York.
Right, that's why I was surprised about how they didn't make any moves defensively. Like, the defense is abysmal right now. It's completely being overran by teams that should not be beating the Giants this bad. If you're looking at the offense, Eli Manning should be leading Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham Jr. to highest scoring games because those guys are amazing. But looking at this trade deadline, like, Giants should have done something with defense if they want to make a run. Or maybe they're tanking this season, being 1-7. So I guess I'm not the general manager for the Giants, but if I was trying to rebuild for the future, as I think they'll have to. They'll have to decide to do that because their defense is a mess. So you start this season, you trade Janoris Jenkins, you get maybe some draft picks for the upcoming draft, and you go from there.
I would just say that I think their locker room is a bit toxic. Like Logan discussed the Broncos locker room and Vance Joseph losing that last podcast. I would say there's a similar situation. Probably not as extreme, but in the Giants organization, their players seem to be going online. Like Odell, we've heard from Odell multiple times, which is just not healthy for an organization. You can't trust playing with a guy by his side, trusting that he'll get full effort if he doesn't care. But just a quick segment on like their record and who they played so far. I mean, they played Jaguars, Cowboys, Texans, Saints. I would say a game they should have won was the Cowboys, but other than that, I don't see, like, the Panthers, Eagles, Falcons, Redskins. None of these teams are games I would expect the Giants to win at this point, just with the team they have. I wouldn't expect them to have won those type of games. I think the Redskins are a lot better than people give them credit for with Adrian Peterson and those type of things. And I would just say their schedule does get a bit easier coming up with the 49ers and the Buccaneers in these two games.
The Buccaneers, who you think are going to go 11-5?
It will, but they are. Yes, that is correct. And they have the Titans, too. So, an easier schedule going forward. So, I think they might be trying to string together a few games here, which would be big for them.
Do you think that they would still try to win those, being in the position they are now?
I would say yes. But it's just because I believe they think that they're very close to being a very good team. And I say that's why they held on to Jenkins, Collins. I hope they give them a chance to re-sign, but it's less likely if they lose. So right now, I think they're trying to win, keep those guys happy, bring them back.
If I'm the Giants, when I'm making these decisions, obviously you're taking in mind who you can build this team around again. Because it's really a team that does need fairly seriously retooled. There are some giant holes. But when I look at the two players that we've mentioned the most, Landon Collins and Janoris Jenkins, Landon Collins is 24. He's one of the best safeties in the NFL. He's proven for multiple years that he's a top-tier talent, and you can sign him this year. Whereas Janoris Jenkins is 30, and really has kind of hit the peak of his career. He's only going to start going down from, not here necessarily, but maybe even in a year or two.
Yeah.
And he's already started to struggle a little more in pass coverage. Not significantly to the point where he's not a player you can rely on, but you can see some downgrade from where he was best in his career. So I wonder maybe if trading Janoris Jenkins would have been the smartest decision for them.
I think it would have, because like you said, he was at the peak of his career, still putting up solid numbers comparatively, but I don't know. I guess the Giants, they're a different team. I guess I would have traded to Janoris Jenkins for maybe a second round if you were lucky, but I would take a third in this situation of the game. A third rebuild, I'm hoping.
Well, I just saw in the Jenkins Collins situation, there wasn't actually a huge ton of interest because they were asking for a second round pick, which is kind of high. I know you said Collins is one of the best safeties, but apparently teams were put off by that because of his issues with Eli Apple in the past with locker room. So for some reason, they're not seeing him as a very good culture guy to bring in. So teams are seeing him as more liability than asset at this point.
From an outsider looking in on that situation when that happened, I viewed that more as Eli Apple. I think Landon Collins is a very good player, and it just seemed like he wanted to have Eli Apple mature, and he had given him opportunities in the past, had talked to him, had worked with him, he said that. But at just some points, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I don't think Eli Apple wanted to be in New York. I don't think he was committed to working as hard and getting better with that team as he could. And I can't really blame Landon Collins for that. But I find it surprising that the market was so lukewarm, especially when there were teams that seriously needed some defensive reinforcements. Just looking right now, especially with pass defenses, these two are both backfield defensive players. Kansas City was a team who's trying to compete with a 31st ranked pass defense. Mm-hmm. New England at 29. Philadelphia's down there at 27, like we mentioned. Even a team like New Orleans who went and got Eli Apple, at 23, you think maybe they would just step up and go for Jenkins or Collins.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, what do we know? Another thing, no quarterbacks moved, which to some may seem like it makes sense, but to some you may find it surprising because you have teams that are definitely quarterback needy and not just teams that are trying to get a young guy to rebuild. Teams like Jacksonville who may be looking for a stopgap guy or Miami who have struggled with injuries to Tannehill and Brock Osweiler might not be the best backup there. You might trade for a guy. There's lots of viable options in the backup position around the league. Just to name a few names, Nick Foles, Josh McCown, Tyrod Taylor, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's obviously a starter. But I saw all four of those players had garnered interest around the trade deadline, and none of them moved. Do you think it was smart of teams to leave them there, or do you think a quarterback needy team looking for a quarterback should have traded for one of those guys or another guy?
I would say no, not for those four names. I would say the asking price for one of them would be too high for the value they provide that team for the rest of the season.
Is that one, just so we know, Josh McCown?
Josh McCown wasn't even on the table for the teams I was thinking of. Plus, Josh McCown wouldn't provide them any value, I don't think, as a starter in any case. So I think they just put him as a reliable backup option.
Well, I'm just going to propose the question to the both of you. Would you take Josh McCown over Brock Osweiler?
I would say I would take neither of them.
Okay, if you're in a situation, you're Miami. Ryan Tannehill?
In that situation, start the rookie.
Ryan Tannehill is out for the year. Yeah. There's no rookie. Would you rather have...
Who's their practice squad quarterback?
I don't know and I don't care. Would you rather have Brock Osweiler now, the way he's been playing, which he's made some plays, but he hasn't looked real convincing? Or would you rather trade for a guy like Josh McCown, who you know has proven to be a viable stopgap option for that Jets team in the past years?
I would say it probably depends on how much you have to give up to trade. Do you stick with what you have, or is it worth giving up that? Is Josh McCown going to be that much more of an asset than Brock Osweiler? If you're the Dolphins.
I'd estimate you're getting Josh McCown fifth for a late round pick, anywhere from 5th to 7th.
Okay, so I would say I would stick with Brock Osweiler. I think he's the same serviceable player, and I would even argue that he's better than Josh McCown in some capacity. I know Josh McCown has played with better offensive lines than Osweiler has been blessed to play with. So I would say I've seen more out of Osweiler in terms of just a winner. So I think I would want to stick with him.
I don't know. I would have to disagree with Jacob here because of the fact that Brock Osweiler is a turnover machine. And he's seen 3 teams in the past, 5 years? And he's been...
4.
Four.
Saw the Browns for a day.
That's right. I'm
he was on the Browns, technically. He was on the Texans. He obviously signed that big contract. Yeah. Had 2 stints with the Broncos so far in his career, and now is in Miami.
He has had numerous chances to show that he is a viable starter. There's a reason why Brock Osweiler was the backup in Miami land. That's because of the fact that Brock is not a proven winner. It's very clear to me that Brock Osweiler doesn't know how to lead a team. And to me, Josh McCown has the solid gameplay that is needed in a quarterback. He doesn't intercept the ball. I mean, he doesn't throw picks that much. He makes connections to receivers when it counts. And at this point, if you're giving him a late round pick, I'd go for it if I was the Dolphins. If I'm still trying to push for the playoffs, I want a quarterback who isn't going to throw the ball.
But you realize Brock Osweiler has never had a season where he's had... There's only been one season that he's had one interception more than the touchdown for that season. So that means he's only had one season where he had more interceptions than touchdowns. Josh McCown has had 1, 2, 3 seasons with interceptions more than touchdowns.
Could you give those years, please?
Yes. 2014 with the Buccaneers, 11 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. With the Bears, he had 6 and 8, so 6 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He got benched that season, though, so I would say that. And then next year, 2016 with the Browns, he went 6 and 7, which he was then again benched that year. So those 2 years. And that is only by 1, but I would argue if you compare that to those years for Osweiler, 10 and 6 with the Broncos, so 10 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. And then the 1 year where he had 1 more was 2016 with the Texans. He hit 15 touchdowns, 16 interceptions.
That year with the Texans was a messy, messy year for him. And that year with the Broncos, he was backed up by one of the greatest defenses in NFL history.
That's true.
He wasn't asked to do too much, and neither of these quarterbacks will be asked to do too much in whatever situation they go in.
Right, but what I would argue for Josh McCown, I'm not going to discount his last season last year, where it was 18 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. He actually had a really good season last year. I think just the Jets are moving in a younger direction with Darnold. But I still feel as if that was because of the Jets having their great defense, and they actually have a better core than I think people give them credit for. I think their wide receiver core is better, and their line is better than people give them credit
for. That's fair. But for concerning Josh McCown or Brock Osweiler, I have to look at Brock Osweiler was paid bank to go to Texans after his stunning year in Broncos territory. And that clearly did not pay off for the Texans at all, as they actually had to cut him short, right? They traded him before his contract ended.
It was like an NBA kind of trade. With the NBA, a lot of times you have to trade an asset, like a pick with a bad contract to get rid of him. And that's very rare in the NFL. And that's what they had to do. They threw in a valuable second-round pick just to get Osweiler off that roster.
Literally had to destroy their future to get Brock Osweiler off that team.
That's a pick that they could be using to protect Deshaun Watson right now, because Deshaun Watson's been running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
Right.
He's been performing, but that O-line hasn't been helping him.
Exactly. So when I'm looking at consistency, sure, Josh McCown may have more interceptions and more seasons than Brock Osweiler. Right now, I'm looking at the bigger picture, and I'm seeing that Brock Osweiler does not have the mental capabilities to bring a Dolphins team through Brocktober
into November and December.
Yeah, exactly. And Josh McCown, I mean, who knows? It's a big what-if at this point, but for me, I would go look at backups, and I would say, listen, Josh McCown, you'd be a really good asset to us. you're an old asset, and we'll probably have to go draft a quarterback in the draft. But right now, we're in a mediocre situation, and you might be the guy that brings us up. That was Case Keenum for the Vikings last year. He was nobody. He was coming from the Texans, and look what he has now. So taking a chance on a mediocre quarterback, Brock Osweiler has had the chances and has not proven himself, but I see that Josh McCown could do that.
Just one quick short thing I'd like to mention too, but you said Osweiler has been in the league. He's been in the league for 15 years, and Brock's been for 6, and 3 of those for Brock have been backup. So I would say he doesn't have as large of a sample size. I know we talked a little about quarterbacks, like the Teddy Bridgewater conversation, who we'd have over. We talked about sample sizes not being there. So I may be arguing from the standpoint of not having enough evidence to back up my point on that one.
Let's get away from Josh McCown, because there were other quarterbacks in this situation. Like, I want to point out Jacksonville. I think everybody's seen that Blake Bortles isn't the answer. So I was very surprised that they chose to stand pat in a team that's built to compete. And obviously, with Leonard Fournette out and that Carlos Hyde trade, Carlos Hyde is a good running back. He's definitely not as talented as Leonard Fournette is. So you'd think they'd want a quarterback to change that up. Like, is Tyrod Taylor that much... Do you think he's worse than Blake Bortles? Because I think Tyrod's a better quarterback than Blake Bortles. So are you surprised a team like the Jaguars didn't move for a QB?
I would... I'm extremely surprised. I think if you're mortgaging like a 5th-round pick for a veteran quarterback just to come in and maybe not even start, just maybe put pressure on Bortles. You at this point you need to light a fire under that guy, because there's people coming after him, and I haven't seen that from him yet. He needs to start being like, you know what, this is my team. I want to take ownership of this, and I don't want it to be in the conversation, oh, the defense is the person who's just keeping us afloat. He needs to excel. But what I would argue is Tyrod Taylor was the best option. I think Tyrod Taylor, there's like... I would argue 7 teams in the NFL that I would say Tyrod Taylor could be a starting quarterback for.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Yeah.
I think he would excel on the Jaguars. I think he could be top 15 in passing and rushing and just all those areas that he excels in. He would extend plays. That's just what the Jaguars' offense needs. They need a breath of fresh air and someone who's able to create. And that's what Tyrod Taylor does. And I would say he was probably the best option at the lowest price, maybe. Because the Browns probably don't value him as much right now, because Baker's for the present and the future.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you hit it around the nail there. I mean, Tyrod Taylor has been a sturdy veteran. That's why the Browns went to go get him in the offseason, because they needed a solid option while Baker Mayfield developed. And as Baker Mayfield has assumed the throne in the Cleveland Brown quarterback hierarchy, Tyrod Taylor is expendable at this point. So, for me... Tyrod Taylor is a starting caliber quarterback. Now, I'm pretty sure that he would be over Nick Foles, as like those two are the biggest free agents, I would say. I mean, I'm sorry, the big trading.
Why Nick Foles? Why are you even bringing Nick Foles up?
Because he did win a Super Bowl.
Teams did inquire about Nick Foles with Philadelphia.
Well, so Fitzpatrick and McCown are out there too, right?
Those are the 4 names that I saw that had some traction around the league.
Okay.
That teams were calling to look at those quarterbacks as maybe a stopgap option or an insurance policy in case one of the quarterbacks on their roster did get hurt.
Okay, so you would take Foles over Fitzpatrick and McCown?
Fitzpatrick's starting.
The Fitzpatrick one is obviously a bad comparison because he was just... thrust into a starter role this last week.
It depends on how much you'd have to give up. Because they might be willing to trade him for a price. But I think Fitzpatrick might be the most you would have to give up.
But as the Buccaneers said with DeSean Jackson, they're obviously not looking to rebuild this team.
No,
I don't think they're trading Fitzpatrick then.
Right. No, yeah.
It's a name that was just brought up as teams inquired. Sure. But I don't think the minute they named him the starter for this next week, I don't think he became a realistic option.
Right, and as much as I don't want to say it, like, Nick Foles is a viable starting option for these struggling teams. Like, he did take an underdog Eagles team throughout the playoffs and win a Super Bowl. Like, I can't, even though I hate to say it, he beat my Vikings... He did prove himself, and he proved himself on the biggest stage in the world, arguably. So if I'm looking at rebuilding like the Jaguars, I would go for a guy like Tyrod Taylor. I would go for a guy like Nick Foles. I would bargain my options. I would see which one would fit with my system the best, and like see, look at the prices. Like Jacob said, like if you're giving up a second or third round pick for a quarterback, I'm not sure, for half a season, I'm not sure how that could pay off well for you in the long run.
Oh, okay. Can I just throw two more names out there? Just to throw names out there. So AJ McCarron is currently a backup. I don't know if they would think about doing that. I believe he's on the Raiders, I think, as the backup. AJ McCarron, and then Sam Bradford is the backup for the Cardinals.
Mm.
And I do not think that would probably be like a seventh round pick.
I don't think Sam Bradford. Is he healthy? Mm. I don't know whether or not
he is.
But is he really? that's hard because I don't think you can rely on Bradford to stay healthy.
That's what the Cardinals try to do, and that didn't work.
But you're right, with that Raiders one, I don't think you could really tell what the Raiders were going to do, and that's a good transition. The last topic I want to hit on for teams that didn't make a move on deadline day is the Oakland Raiders, because the Oakland Raiders were linked to trade a lot of players away. Two of the names left on the roster that were commonly mentioned were Gerrion Conley and Carl Joseph, their last two first-round picks. The year before this last year's draft, and then 2 years before that. They both play backfield positions, cornerback and safety. They may have been a option for teams looking for that help. Are you surprised that John Gruden stayed pat at the deadline and didn't move any more players?
I think, Gruden is just a piece of work, because he comes in the Raiders organization, he gets this huge, enormous contract from them.
How enormous?
$100 million, enormous, 10 years. That's locked down, baby. And he trades away the biggest generational talent I've seen defensively in a while. And we've seen how he's done in the Chicago Bears, Khalil Mack. And now, after going, like, the abysmal, are they 2-6 now? Or are they 1-7?
They're 1-7.
1-7. And
he's a first-year head coach, though.
He's not a first-year head coach. He came in the league.
No, a first-year head coach for the Raiders.
Oh, please. All right. He knows how the ropes go.
How many years has Gruden been out of coaching? He knows what he has to do. What was that? That was like 15 to 17 years, am I not?
15 to 17 years.
Yes.
No, it was not that long.
How old is Jake Gruden?
John Gruden?
Jake Gruden is...
I got it, sorry.
Jay Gruden is younger than John Gruden.
Yeah.
Let me finish my point for his quarterback. Logan, while you look this up, let me finish my point quick here. I would just say he's still building this team and building a vision for this team for the future. No.
This is
and here's what I want to point out. Jackson, Gerrion Conley and Carl Joseph are on contract next year. So I would say he's looking at what players can he keep for the future, and he probably needs a closer look at them.
But John Gruden, gosh freaking dang.
Okay, they have three first-round picks, too.
Right.
So he needs to see who the prospects are at the end of the season. If he can get a safety that's going to be a free agent, and then he'll make his trade.
This Raiders team was not meant to rebuild. It was not. They were contenders. Derek Carr, Amari Cooper... They traded away Michael Crabtree.
Oh, they are not rebuilding.
Khalil Mack.
They are not rebuilding.
It looks like they are.
Okay, so they have the 3rd, 12th, and 21st, and 35th pick. Stop saying skip.
No.
We're not skipping Shannon.
No.
Okay.
I just like
They have the 3rd, 12th, 21st, and 35th pick after the season.
Projected,
as of now. If the season ended today, that's the picks they would have.
Yeah.
I would say it's a retool and not a rebuild. At this point. Yes, because Gruden's going to draft people who can play right now. And he's going to get people into that system. And he's guaranteed to Derek Carr that they are not rebuilding. And I believe that they are not rebuilding.
So you trade away the young wide receiver who has an enormous ceiling. You trade Amari freaking Cooper. I mean, you get a first round pick.
Calm down.
How are the chances that first round pick is going to pay off, just like Amari Cooper?
Okay, Amari Cooper paid off.
We do have to mention great seasons.
Okay.
We have to mention.
He's so bad.
Could you look up?
Oh my gosh. All
right, Jacob, look up Amari Cooper's stats per year. I'd like to hear catches, yards, and then drops, because one of the biggest knocks on Amari Cooper was he had some serious drop issues. Jay Gruden is 51 years old. John Gruden is 55 years old.
Oh, by the way, it was 15 to 17 years of coaching.
All right.
Just gonna put that out there.
But I don't know. We're obviously very younger, and weren't old enough to really follow sports when Gruden won that Super Bowl with Tampa Bay.
I'm sorry, what did you want me to look up again?
I would like you to look up Amari Cooper's stats and see catches, drops, and 100%. Yards. Yep. But John Gruden, a lot of people said he won that Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's team. Tony Dungy had built that team, and then they obviously let him go, and John Gruden came in and won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But they weren't all that successful after that year. This is not going to be that situation. Nobody's going to be like, hey, John Gruden won a Super Bowl with Jack Del Rio's team because, one, he tore Jack Del Rio's team down, and, two, they're definitely not close to winning a Super Bowl in the next 4 years at this point. And I do want to talk about Derek Carr because while Gruden said he was committed to Carr, Gruden also said he was committed to Khalil Mack at first and Amari Cooper at first, and they both got traded. So do you still think that there's a decent chance that, let's say, we hit the offseason and Gruden decides to trade Derek Carr for assets as well?
I would not even be surprised at this point. John Gruden has made so many mind-boggling decisions in his first 2 months of coaching this team in NFL season, of course. So I would not even be surprised because Derek Carr has been underperforming by all accounts, and John Gruden has made it clear that he is trying to, as his 10-year contract presumes, he's going to try to build this team for a dynasty, I'm assuming. That's for everyone. But John Gruden has a plan in mind, I guess. It may be mangled, but I'm not sure. I don't see how this can pay off for him good in the future. If he wants this team to be relevant, for me, don't trade Derek Carr, because if you're going to be doing a retool, as Jacob's claiming, you don't want to give up your franchise quarterback that you've dedicated. Don't laugh at him. You just said it yourself. But I don't know. Derek, he shouldn't be traded, but I would not even be surprised if he was.
Well, you just going on calling my thing detrimental is not going to prove your point. Just call like doing retool in quotation marks.
Well, retool and rebuild are completely different.
All right.
Let's go to these Amari Cooper stats, shall we?
All right.
Okay, this year he has averaged 35 yards per game and has one touchdown on the season.
Yeah, about the years before.
For the Raiders, right? The year before, 42.5 yards a game. Okay. Whole season.
Could I get a
seven year, touchdowns?
A year stat on that? Like how many yards he had all year?
Oh, how many yards he had all year? This year he had 280 through 8 games. 22 receptions. Target to reception rate is not even a third. It's under a third his catches from the targets that he
So his drops were improving is what I'm trying to get at, because that was the biggest knock on him.
No, the completion percentage to him is at the lowest of the low of this season.
So he definitely...
But I have not looked at a drop statistic, but this year and last year, he had 680 in 2017. His two best years were the year he came into the league, and then the year after that, he hit 1,000 twice, and he's been declining ever since.
Which makes that interesting. So I just want to... We're going to shorten this. Yes or no, do you think the Raiders should have traded assets at the trade deadline? Jackson, then Jacob. Simple yes or no.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. And our last thing, I'd like you guys to try to do your best John Gruden impersonation. Man, I love that quarterback. Wow! That's not good.
I don't know John Gruden that well. I don't follow him. I don't respect that guy. But, Jacob, you can go take a crack at
it. No, Jackson, you got it. Go ahead.
No, I literally cannot do it.
It's your thing.
All right, we'll move on. I've embarrassed myself enough. So instead of talking about what didn't happen, let's start talking about what did happen. There were some pretty major trades that went on today, and we'll start with one that hits a little close to home. Demaryius Thomas has been traded from the Denver Broncos to the Houston Texans. The Broncos get a 2019 fourth and seventh round draft pick for him. The Texans will get Demaryius Thomas as well as a Broncos seventh rounder. So essentially the deal is the Broncos get a fourth, Texans get Demaryius, they swap seventh rounders. I want to get your guys' impressions on this trade before I go and cry after the show.
How about we, you want to grade it from each side too?
Let's do a winner-loser deal. So I'm going to ask you who you think won the deal here, and if it's a mutual trade for both sides, you can say I think both teams are a winner here. But I'm going to start with you, Jacob, and I'll move to Jackson.
I would go Texans. I would give them the win in this deal easily, grade B. And then I would, the Broncos, I don't know, C minus on this one. They're the losers easily. This is not a return for the type of caliber wide receiver Demaryius Thomas still is. And I think he will help them. I would say the Texans got a lot better at this deadline. And right now, I would say, watch out for the Texans. I would say they're going to be a playoff team, and they're going to threaten a lot of teams this year. Will Fuller going down, and they put a replacement in for him right away. Now, I don't know how well he worked in that system, or will he work as well as Will Fuller, but I assume with the big body wide receiver that he is, he will work, because Deshaun Watson will bomb the ball down the field to him, and he will get up and make those catches. And that's why I think they win this trade.
Texans, by the longest shot I can shoot, what were the Broncos thinking when they were only getting a fourth round draft pick for a wide receiver who's still putting up solid numbers with a struggling Denver Broncos team? I'm sorry, Logan, but it's true.
I know.
Even with Emmanuel Sanders and Case Keem at the helm, diverting competition, Demaryius Thomas is still delivering solid numbers.
Okay.
Let me finish. Demaryius Thomas is by no means worth a fourth round. Maybe a second rounder. I would even say that the Broncos could have gotten a first round out of this if they negotiated this right.
No.
That the Cowboys are giving a first round pick for Amari Cooper, but they're only getting
giving a fourth round
for Demaryius Thomas.
Okay, Jackson, let me say this. They're buying into Amari Cooper's future. They're buying into his potential. I don't think people are thinking Demaryius Thomas has that much of a future. Plus, his contract is up.
That's why this is such a steal for the Texans.
He has this year and next year on his contract. It is unsure whether or not.
And Thomas is planning on signing with the Cowboys, which would mean they have him for an extended period.
You mean Cooper?
Cooper is planning on signing, which means they have assurance of him having him in the future. You don't give up a first-round pick for a guy that you know probably is either going to be done or might leave.
Right.
But what I would say is he's declined these past 3 years.
Demaryius Thomas?
Yes.
Okay,
let's see. 2012 through 2016, he had all 1,000-yard seasons.
He made four Pro Bowls in that span?
2017.
We won a Super Bowl?
2017, with at Case Keenum-led Broncos letters, won a Super Bowl.
You mean the Peyton Manning led Broncos won a Super Bowl?
Oh, that was
How
this year.
Dare you?
That was this year. Case Keenum's going to win it for us. 2017, Broncos, he had 949 yards, and this year he has 402. Not very good through 8 games to have 402. That would just be a worse season than last year at this point. That would be 804 receiving yards.
But that was with
good math.
Thank you.
I didn't know you could do that math.
Ah, yes, thank you.
But Demaryius Thomas was playing with underperforming quarterbacks during that time. I'm not saying that he has regressed, and that is expected. He's getting older. However, Demaryius Thomas, what are you giving me the face? Demaryius Thomas is not worth a four. Are you saying that he's worth a four round pick?
Mr. Layer.
Is he a fourth round
Layer?
Is he a fourth round pick, Jacob?
Mr.
That's my question
Layer.
First. Yes, that is my name.
At this point, putting up the statistics he is worth a third round pick.
Oh my gosh.
I would say they got a deal on
this
one.
You're thinking like the Broncos now. You're thinking like, he's a first
round. Excuse me? Okay, Mr. Layer, let me let you know here.
Okay.
They're looking at Demaryius Thomas as an old prospect who might not have that much of a future and hasn't put up great numbers lately. That's what he is now. I'm judging him based on what he is right now. If he goes in and this is a good fit and they're able to lengthen the field like I think they will be, Demaryius Thomas maybe will be worth a first round pick, maybe even, in their system. I think Demaryius Thomas is an excellent fit for the Texans system. I think with what the Raiders started having was quick passing game. They're dumping everything down. So, I mean,
I completely agree with you. And that's why I'm saying such a boneheaded move by Broncos for not getting more value out of that pick.
Well,
they swapped seventh and they got a fourth round pick. What are you going to do with a fourth?
Well, do you think part of the reason that we say this looks worse is because the Cowboys egregiously overpaid, possibly, for Amari Cooper?
I think
I don't know if you guys believe Amari Cooper's worth a fourth, but do you think if they don't pay that first for him, this trade looks better?
It definitely does look better. I mean, I'm looking at this comparatively. Keep it in your mouth, too.
What?
Okay. Anyway.
What am I keeping
in mind? I think I
would... Snarky comments and meanness.
No, but yeah, I would definitely agree. If Amari Cooper went for like a second round or a third round, I'd be a little bit less...
I would say they should have tried. I hope they tried to send be like third round pick.
I don't think they started with a fourth.
I think they should have thrown out their third round pick for Amari Cooper.
They must have been desperate to get Tom Travis.
I think the Raiders would have taken a deal for a third round pick. I think the Raiders would have.
No, they wouldn't have.
For Amari Cooper, yes.
If the Cowboys needed a wide receiver, they'd take
advantage. If the Cowboys stayed at three and for up to now to the trade deadline, I think the Raiders would that would have been the best deal.
I think John Gruden would trade his wife for a sixth. I want to transition to more trades, but I want to jump in as a Denver fan.
Go right ahead.
Demaryius was one of those players that I remember getting drafted when I first started following the team. I didn't want to see him go.
Yeah.
Obviously, I want us to stay competitive as we can, and think going in every year that we could have a shot, and this year could be our year if everything works out right.
Wait, can you just pause quick? Let's restart this. I get the perfect music. All right, go ahead, Logan.
Demaryius Thomas is a player I'm going to miss. He's a top three Broncos pass catcher of all time, and I don't know if that's arguable. He won a Super Bowl with us. He helped us win a playoff game with Tim freaking Tebow. And just what he did for the community and for the team, he played it the Bronco way. And he's a player that we're going to miss, not just on the field, but in the locker room. But I get it. When it's time, it's time. I wish him the best of luck with the rest of his career, and I hope someday that we're nice enough to give him the classy one-year contract, or one-day contract, let him retire a Bronco. You can't see it, but I'm crying. All right, let's move on to another wide receiver who got traded, Golden Tate. Golden Tate was traded from the Lions to the Eagles for a 2019 third-round pick. Does this seem like a good deal for either side? Again, we'll do our win-loss deal. I'll start with Jackson this time. Yeah. The Golden Tate trade. What do you feel about that?
I think that it was a silly trade for Lions, honestly. I was very surprised when I heard about this. Because the Lions are actually doing well this year. They're only about three games back out of the division. They could definitely make a comeback here. And Golden Tate has been not disappointing this year. He's been actually pretty good for the Lions. Receiving, I don't know his specific stats. I don't have him up right now. But Golden Tate, he has 44 catches and 3 touchdowns this season. So... if the Lions saw a value out of him for a third-round pick, he is getting a little bit older. He's 30.
Will be a free agent after this year.
He was probably heading out then. So Philadelphia picking up a steal of a wide receiver, pairing him up with Alshon Jeffrey and Zach Ertz, they're going to need all the help they can get with that struggling backfield they have out there. Carson Wentz will definitely take advantage of his new toy out there.
The new toy.
The new toy.
The Eagles are in win-now mode, so I think this is big for them, especially alongside Jeffrey and Engelore. I think they were looking for that third option. I think also pairing him with Ertz out there, that completes their receiving core out there, and I would include Ertz in that receiving core. I know you normally talk about receivers in a receiving core, but I would argue Ertz is such a mobile tight end that you can almost consider him a wide receiver.
Right.
He's a pass catcher. Catchers. Yeah, yeah. He's
top 15 this year in receiving.
He's got the most receptions on that Eagles team.
Yes, so I would argue Eagles they probably win this one. I just don't understand Detroit's identity with the Harrison buying into him and then selling Tate. It's like, where are they sitting right now?
See, I think they're in a retooling stage. Because their defense is doing average.
But I would argue Galladay is a good replacement for Tate.
That's what I wanted to ask, if this is a buyer or a seller move for Detroit. Because if you're right, it seems like a seller move to sell off Golden Tate, especially when he's still in the prime of his career. But they've already got a talented receiver in Marvin Jones, who's a great deep threat. And Kenny Galladay has proven that he can be a good receiver in this league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Galatron, whatever they call him.
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm.
So, is this necessarily a seller's move, or is this their way of saying Kenny Galladay is the future and we want to use him with Marvin Jones?
They're definitely going young.
It's hard to part with a receiver who's on his way to a 1,000-yard season.
And
I'm going to tell you that much. 517 yards so far, good average per catch with 11.8 yards per catch, and putting in 3 touchdowns. I mean, at this point, he's on his way to a 1,000-yard year. It's always tough to part with that type of a receiver. So I think at this point, I would say yes. They think Galladay is the answer going forward. But you have to think with Stafford getting older that either they think he has like at least 5 more years to retool, or maybe they think they're ready. They're on the verge and they're buying. They just had to trade a little bit of their powerful offense to get a little bit more on defense. And maybe that's what they were doing at this deadline.
All right. I want to ask just the winner and loser quick, and then we'll fly through the rest of this trade and the next trade to get to another one.
Yep.
So just real fast, winner or loser of this deal, Lions or Eagles? Jackson.
Eagles.
Winner?
Yes, Eagles are the winner.
Eagles are the winner, easily.
All right, so we're going to go to the next one, and I don't anticipate we'll spend too much on it. I don't want to ask a winner or a loser necessarily on it. I just want your opinion. Ty Montgomery was traded from the Packers to the Ravens for a 2020 seventh round pick. I want to know, is this the Packers' way of just saying bleep you to Ty Montgomery?
I think this is the Packers' way of saying Aaron Rodgers.
Hey, I censored that.
I think this is the way the Packers were like, Aaron Rodgers, we respect you. Because Aaron Rodgers at this point hates Ty Montgomery now. So Aaron Rodgers is just like, get him out of here. So they sent him out. I mean, they're not losing anything, honestly. They haven't been playing him that much.
No.
So their running back are a seventh round pick since last year. Ty Montgomery looked so good at the beginning of last year,
right?
How the mighty have fallen, but the Packers need to figure out their running back.
Exactly.
They need to figure out their backfield.
But I think with this move, the Packers have chosen Jamal Williams as their long-term answer for the running backs position.
I would say along with Aaron Jones. That's going to be a good split.
I'm sorry. I totally forgot about Aaron Jones. That's my bad. No,
I would say it's almost an even split.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out who it is.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This makes the running back situation a little bit easier to identify.
Right.
That's my bad. But Ty Montgomery, though he did show lots of flashes of greatness when he was on Packers last year.
Goodness, maybe.
Sure, that's fair enough.
Solidness.
Yeah, so the Ravens are getting a good pass-catching running back / wide receiver flex. That'll be a nice combination with Alex Collins, as he is more of a trucking running back, to my estimations. And, I mean, we'll see how Ty Montgomery fits in the system. They did use Danny Woodhead very, very effectively while he was there, as I see a little bit of him in Ty Montgomery. So I guess we'll see how that goes in as the Ravens are trying to retool as well, seeing whether or not they're going to start Lamar Jackson this year or they're going to stick with Joe Flacco. Ty Montgomery definitely was a good pickup for the Ravens, I think, at this point of the year, as they are trying to contend with their best defense.
All right. You're right. They did use Danny Woodhead very well when they had him. And it's a solid move for the Ravens, who have lacked stability in their backfield for a long time. So to just give a seventh-round pick in 2 years for a guy who might turn out to be a solid contributor on a team that's always shooting for playoffs,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a solid move for both sides. There's no real winner or loser in that deal. Though a kind of deal like that is hard to grade. A deal that can be easier to grade is the one we're going to move on to next, which is the Dante Fowler trade.
Mm-hmm.
Dante Fowler, former first-round pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars, was just traded to the Los Angeles Rams for a 2019 third-rounder and a 2020 fifth-rounder. I'll go to Jacob to start this one. Jacob, do you think that the Rams overpaid for Dante Fowler, a player who has shown he can be talented but has also struggled on and off the field, or do you think that was just about right?
I think it was just about right, but I also think the Jaguars have given up on him. So I think this is a fine return for a player you don't think has potential, and I think that giving him away is saying that he doesn't have potential. And so I would say both teams get what they wanted out of this trade.
I think you're right. I'd just like to point out on the giving up on him thing, This year, Dante Fowler has 2 sacks, but he's only played about 32.7% of the Jacksonville Jaguars' defensive snaps. This is compared to last year where he broke out a little bit, not in a starting role, but in a rotational role. He had 8 sacks, and he did show potential, but he really hasn't shown that this year. Jackson, what are your thoughts on the deal?
The Rams are struggling a little bit on the line with getting that edge rushing capabilities. They do have the Ndamukong Suh, they have Aaron Donald, and they have
Michael Brockers.
Michael Brockers. but they do are struggling with getting
Michael
that
who?
Edge.
Michael Brockers.
Michael who?
Michael Brockers is a very good defensive tackle. Don't pretend like you don't know who he is, but continue. You're right. They have struggled on the edge.
And so Dante Fowler, a player with outstanding potential, but facing some difficulties in teamwork and such like that on and off the field. I think that the Rams are good enough that they can take that chance with a 3rd and 5th, as they are young, relatively, with Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, and their defense is amazing. It should be good for another 2-3 years. So I'm thinking that the Rams really have nothing to lose here in taking Dante Fowler. If it doesn't work out, that's a 3rd and 5th. That does suck, but it's not the end of the world.
It's sensible for both sides. Rams get outside pass rushing they need and get a guy with potential for the future.
Yep.
It just seems like a little bit much to give up in that situation, but I think it's sensible for both sides, so even.
I think Jaguars won.
Even?
I'm not Jaguars, I'm sorry, Rams.
Both sides get what they need.
Yep, you're right. It does give the Rams a inconsistent but talented player to help on that edge rush and give them a little push for the playoffs this year. And the Jaguars do get some value back, and they've proven in the last couple of years that they can draft good players, especially late in the draft, like Yannick Ngakoue. So I think you're right. It does work for both sides. Moving on to another deal, the last big deal of the day, one that I think we talked about on... I can't remember if we talked about it, whether it was on air or in person, and I definitely didn't think it was going to happen, but HaHa Clinton Dix got traded. HaHa Clinton Dix is one of the best safeties this year so far and has one of the best names in football. He was traded from the Packers to the Redskins for a 4th-round pick. Do you think this is an underpay? This is reasonable for HaHa? Who do you think comes off better in this deal?
This is a terrible trade for the Packers.
Yep. Oh,
HaHa Clinton Dix is a Pro Bowl caliber safety. Now they pair him with DJ Swearinger. This looks amazing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you're looking at the Packers defense, they're already struggling against teams. And how is Rodgers even accepting this? HaHa Clinton, as you said, is one of the best safeties in the league.
Aaron Rodgers is not the GM, I'd like to point out.
But
Aaron Rodgers does not have final say.
But I'm just saying, if Aaron Rodgers wants to win now, and he's clearly showing he wants to, HaHa is the next step for you to do that.
Right.
And so I'm saying that they severely were not even compensated close what the Redskins gave up.
They're in win now. The Packers should be in win now with Rodgers, I think. So
with him, they're just wasting his prime away, it seems like now.
HaHa Clinton Dix was a player that had just this year left on his contract. He would have been a free agent this offseason.
Yeah, but the Redskins are in win now.
Or he still could be.
The Redskins are in win now, too.
Oh,
right,
at this point.
But do
with
you
Smith
think,
and Peterson, I mean, you have to win now.
But do you think this is a player that the Packers should have held on to and re-signed? I mean, he had been he's very talented.
He would
he
help them a lot in their run
this
year. The Packers are still thinking they're going to win the division and head to the playoffs.
Does this feel like a move that Green Bay made in terms of just giving up, maybe even playing for next year?
I don't think they're giving up.
I don't think you can with Rodgers, but...
Just give me a quick second. I am not actually sure who their backup for him is. I will just give that a quick check.
I can tell you that they have a lot of younger players in that backfield, like Kentrell Bryce, Josh Jones, Jermaine Whitehead.
They both Blake Martinez, too.
Blake Martinez is a linebacker.
Yep.
But those three young guys are going to start handling
still young
snaps when they're moving forward. So I see, in a sense, maybe why you'd make that deal to let those young guys who you think are full of talent get an opportunity. But HaHa Clinton Dix isn't by any means old and is a very talented player. Jackson, what are your thoughts?
Oh,
concerning the Packers situation? Or
concerning the trade in general.
I think that the Redskins got a steal. They have literally one of the best safety duos now in the league, and their coverage now has improved greatly. I think it'll have not as big as an impact that Khalil Mack did on the Bears, but it'll have a big enough that'll just, I think it's going to push the Redskins over into the edge of contending now. Like, they'll definitely, I think that they'll win the division for sure now.
I just don't see why you make this trade unless you're selling as the Packers, and I can't even see why you'd sell with Aaron Rodgers.
Fourth round pick, though.
It doesn't make any sense to sell. Well, Montgomery's out, and now Clinton Dix is out. I don't think Ty Montgomery's that big of a selling indicator. But I think just Dix seems kind of confusing to me. I'll do my 10 push-ups now.
no need. Yeah. That's his name.
Yeah. Oh.
You're allowed.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think it makes the Packers look like sellers. And I'd say there were conversations about Mike McCarthy and him having issues controlling the team and stuff like that. He might even leave on his own if they become sellers. It seems like there's teams that are interested in him. I've heard his name, because there was some speculation earlier, I heard his name even with the Browns.
He does have links back to the Browns. That yes. Browns team is a lot of old Packers management. Mm-hmm. And obviously McCarthy's been been fairly synonymous with Green Bay recently. He's yes. been their coach for a long time.
Has he been the coach there for... How long has he been the coach for there?
Jacob, can you look that up? It feels like he's been the coach there since Vince Lombardi retired for me. But then again, obviously, younger. Don't really remember those mid-70s, 80s Packers.
Right.
Because, yeah. you know, I didn't exist at that point. But I want to ask...
2006 to 2018.
2006. Wow, it seems like it's been...
So much longer.
Like, at least 2000. The Washington Redskins, at this point in the season, are 5-2. The Green Bay Packers are 3-3-1. I want to ask, who do you think ends the year with a better record? The Green Bay Packers or the Washington Redskins?
Washington Redskins.
I'm going to have to go with the Redskins as well.
All right, and then who do you think comes across as the winner in this deal? I'm going to guess both sides.
Redskins.
Is it Redskins?
Redskins. Oh, my goodness gracious.
The skins of red.
All right. So I'm going to do one more thing before we go for the night. I say we're about ready to hit the halfway point of the NFL season. So I think we should do some playoff predictions. Who do we think is going to be the teams that make the playoffs this year in the AFC and the NFC? I think that will be a fun thing to predict. So if you guys want to get those standings up real fast, you can check records. And then we'll start with the AFC. You'll rank the teams. Your first four will be who you think will win each division. And then from there, we'll do our two wild card teams. We won't go any further than that. There's really no point. But I'll give you guys just a few minutes to get those up.
I'm ready. AFC East. I'm start with the AFC
let's
East.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right, let's start with the AFC East.
It's Pats. Easy.
Pat Patriots.
We don't even need to introduce it.
Yep. All right. AFC North. How do we think that's going to go? It's really, there's three teams that are very competitive in that right now, with the Steelers, Bengals, and Ravens all pretty close to each other. So how do you guys think that'll shake out? Just pick the winner.
Steelers.
Bengals.
I'll go Ravens.
Awesome, Logan.
I think that Ravens defense is very talented. Mm-hmm. So
right,
I see them carrying through this year. AFC South.
Texans.
Texans.
All right. AFC West. My boys in the Chiefs.
I think the Chargers will challenge them later season, but the Chiefs, too much firepower.
All right, and then pick your two wild card teams.
I would go, because I chose the Bengals in the AFC North, I would go with the Steelers as one wild card. I assume that you might go with the Bengals, and then we'd have, as of right now, it would look like Chargers, Dolphins, or just Chargers, Dolphins, or second one, and I would go with the Chargers. So Chargers and Bengals for me.
That's what I'm going as well, Bengals and Chargers.
I'm going to go with the Steelers and the Chargers. I think that Cincinnati team is going to have a rough end of the season. I think they've struggled in the past couple weeks, so it wouldn't be surprising to potentially see them choke away the rest of the year. All right, so we'll move on to the NFC here. Starting with the NFC East, who do you guys think will end up pulling out that division and winning?
See, I think this is interesting because Redskins are on top right now, but the Eagles, I just, with that trade for Tate, I think they're going to be even better. And I think they're on the trend. Wentz is just starting to play like that MVP status he was last year before he went down. So I'm actually going to go with the Eagles winning this division.
It's really hard considering how well Washington has been playing. But when you're talking about Carson Wentz and the level he's been playing at, and when you add another wide receiver like the Jacob's saying, Golden Tate, I'm going with Eagles as the top.
It's hard for me to go against the Eagles, especially obviously after last year. They've definitely been suffering from a Super Bowl hangover, but that team's starting to come into its own, and they're going to be dangerous at the end. So I will pick the Eagles as well. Moving on quickly to the NFC North, this one a lot closer. All four of these teams are still very close in the division and could realistically end up getting to the top. But who do you guys think will end up pulling it out?
The Minnesota Vikings will end up pulling out this division.
Yep, I have faith in the team. I have faith in what they're doing. I think the Bears...
It's going to be close. It's going to be close.
Yeah, it's going to be close by all means. But I think the Vikings have the will to keep the division away.
And for me, it's the difference of defense over the Packers. Comparing them to the Packers, for me, it's the difference of defense. And then with the Bears, I would just say the offense is better in terms versus the Bears, I would argue. So I would say the Vikings take it out in that division.
These four teams, not just on in the standings, but have performed very close this year. Each of them have had their highs. Each of them have definitely had their struggles. But I think at the end of the day, the Vikings, with their mesh of talent and coaching, are just going to be too much in that division. It's a hard pick, but I'm going to pick the Vikings as well. NFC South, there's two clear-cut teams fighting for the top there with New Orleans and Carolina. Atlanta and Tampa Bay are a little bit behind, but who do you guys think will end up being up at the top at the end of the year?
This is going to make Michael Waddell a little bit angry here, but I'm going to go with my Cam Newton team, Carolina Panthers.
Shout out Dan Schutz.
Daniel Schutz.
Mr. Schutz.
Cam Newton has been putting up better numbers than he did in his MVP year, and he still hasn't thrown an interception, I don't think. So
let's somebody fact check that, please.
Yeah. I'm not you. Very sure about
I
that.
I have not thrown any interceptions this year.
No, Cam Newton. That. Check if Cam Newton's thrown any interceptions.
Please.
But continue.
But I think the Panthers are on a roll right now. Saints are getting a little bit too cocky, I think, being the Vikings. So I think that the Panthers are going to definitely beat the Saints at least once.
Cam Newton has most definitely thrown interceptions this year, including two in one game versus the New York Giants.
Oh, well, sorry.
The New York Football Giants.
Four interceptions this season for Cam Newton.
Four interceptions.
Still very good, though,
oh,
obviously.
Sorry,
not to discount your point.
No,
but
of course. No, I think the Panthers are going to take this.
Saints win this division easy. I think Panthers dwindle at end of season, but they'll end with a good record. Don't get me wrong. Cam
sure.
As well.
I'm going to go with the Saints as well. That offense has proven to be unstoppable, as well as they're 4-0 on the road this year, which is very good, and they're very good at home, too. So if they're going to keep winning on the road like that and perform at home, that's going to be a team that's hard to stop. Mm-hmm. NFC West, I think we all can agree unanimously. The Rams.
Cardinals. No, I'm kidding.
I know you love Josh Rosen.
Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen. We're going to win. Rams win easy money. No cash money. Jared Goff. Let's go to casino and bank those dollar bills, y'all. Todd Gurley. Buckets.
Okay, Rams is
10 push-ups. do you think the Rams end the season 16-0? Yes
no.
or no?
No, they do not.
I really want them to because Wade Phillips is one of my favorites.
I'm going 14-2 for the Rams this season.
I agree.
Todd Gurley wins MVP this year. That's my prediction so far.
All right, and then we'll get those two wild card teams picked.
So hard in the NFC. I'm going to put that out there.
You're right. There's a lot of close teams.
Bears, Panthers, Seahawks, and at this point, the Panthers have such a good record and are in a really good spot if they lose that division to the Saints. In terms of just looking at their schedule for the rest of the season, it seems like they'll be in a really good spot. And it's so hard to choose between Redskins, Bears, Panthers, and Seahawks.
It's also not out of the realm of possibility that a team like Dallas or Detroit or even Atlanta gets hot. Atlanta's 3-4. Those teams are all realistically still in the mix. The NFC is just so much closer than the AFC is.
Well, let's make our calls. Jackson, who do you think is going to make it?
Since I went with the Eagles, taking the East, I'm going Redskins as my number two wild card, and my Carolina Panthers, and the Saints as the wild card number two.
All right. This is closer for me. I don't necessarily trust the Redskins to finish the year the strong way they've started the year. I like the acquisitions they've made. I think they've all been smart, but it partly comes down to just history. And Washington has proven time and again that they are not ready to play on the big stage. That could very well change this year, but I would not feel as confident going with them as I do with these two teams, the Chicago Bears and the Carolina Panthers.
I'm going with Panthers in the number one wild card spot. I think they'll push the Saints for most of the season and lose out by like two games. So I think they'll be in it. For the second wild card spot, for me, it's so hard. I would discount Bears and Seahawks. I would take the Bears out of that conversation. I would have the Redskins, Cowboys, and Atlanta. And I would actually have trouble choosing between those three teams. It's going to be so close. I almost feel like one of them is going to be a tiebreaker based on head-to-head. And I think Atlanta will beat the Cowboys. So I think Atlanta will win that, but I think the Redskins will beat Atlanta. So I would argue that the Redskins get that second wild card spot.
All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about today? Any news? Could be football related. Could be related to anything going on.
Want to talk about some news stories?
I mean, it's gone on pretty long, but if we just want to touch on it quick, the College Football Playoff Committee came out with their first rankings. I don't know if you guys saw that. Maybe you were busy at, like, dance class or whatever. Jackson, don't you do, like, a spin cycling deal?
No.
But, yeah, that college football playoff ranking came out today. And I don't think to anybody's surprise, Alabama was ranked number one, Clemson number two, LSU at three, Notre Dame at four, Michigan five, Georgia six, Oklahoma seven, Washington State eight, Kentucky up at nine. I don't think anybody saw that coming at the beginning of the year. Ohio State comes in at 10th, then Florida, UCF, West Virginia, Penn State, Utah, Iowa, Texas, Mississippi State, Syracuse, Texas A&M, then NC State, Boston College, Fresno State, Iowa State, and Virginia.
If you fell asleep during that, I do not blame you.
I don't blame you either. I'm so sorry. any opinions about that?
I think it's too early to weigh in, I would argue. I know we... Well, I maybe not too early to weigh in. I would just say at this point, there is... Alabama's number one. It's too easy. Alabama won. I think they'll run away with that for the rest of the season. It's... Honestly, it is a little muddled. I would argue Washington State might get in there late. Other teams could move in, but Clemson is not on as strong ground as they normally are this year. There's a couple other teams that I would argue don't have their spots locked up as much. Notre Dame could easily drop out. So it's some of those teams that you would think on a normal year would have their spots very solid, but this year their teams are a little shaky, whereas if there was one injury, their season could go out the window.
You're right. There are a lot of teams sort of in flux this year. It's very, very close. Mm-hmm. A team like Florida, who has two losses but is still up at 11, that shakes things up definitely. At this point, you have three SEC teams at 1-3-6. If any of those teams lose, Georgia loses two, they're out. LSU loses two, they may be out. The Big Ten is also close with teams high, like Michigan and Ohio State, and Penn State still on the list. It wouldn't be unrealistic to have no teams go undefeated, maybe besides Alabama, who has looked overwhelmingly better than most teams this year, and Clemson, who, as you said, may not be on a strong standing, but are still an incredibly talented team and play in an extremely weak ACC. So any other teams that catch your eye on this list?
No, Kentucky definitely has caught my eye. They haven't been really the biggest football school. They've been always basketball to me. But when I see them on this list at number nine, like, they've been trending up in the right direction, going only with seven wins and one loss. So I'm looking at sleepers here, and I'm thinking Kentucky can make a run for it if they keep at the pace that they're going. So that's really giving me a good surprise. I think Alabama and Clemson will take care of it, though. And number one, number two, and like what you guys were saying, this whole standings could change on a moment's notice.
Okay, I think we should return to our last part, the Crohn's Disease Corner for this week.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Crohn's Disease Corner. This week, something very close to my heart. Colorado. Let's move to Colorado. The headline is Thief's Scheme to Steal Pot, a hilarious plot. Okay. Dave Roberts went into his heist.
Wait. Los Angeles Dodgers manager Dave Roberts?
Yep, he's having a tough time. The heist went exactly as planned. Overnight thieves drove a stolen van right through the front doors of a marijuana shop in Colorado Springs, grabbed as much pot as they could carry, abandoned the van, and fled in a getaway vehicle, reports the Colorado Springs Gazette. The only hitch? All the marijuana they grabbed was actually oregano.
Says oregano!
Says the owners of the Native Foods Dispensary. The still-at-large thieves, believed to be teenagers, grabbed all the stuff in display cases. And those cases don't contain the real thing, reports KKTV. Had the thieves made it into the locked bud room, the story would have been different.
I'm not gonna lie. That was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life.
Well, too bad. We have another story.
Oh, do we?
I always has two stories in a week.
Last time I had three.
Oh, did it? Yeah. Well, we're going to do two this week because I think we should. Okay. Robbing a store 101. Take the money and run.
Are you reading
but not before checking your getaway's car's gas tank. Authorities say a man's bid to rob a Pittsburgh pharmacy was foiled because his car had no gas. Police say the 39-year-old man, Mr. Scallery, fled the pharmacy Wednesday with a small amount of cash and got into the vehicle. When he couldn't drive away, he tried to run on foot but was soon confronted by police. Authorities say he showed the cashier a pistol and demanded cash. He tried to run out to his car, got in his car, tried to start his car, tried to back it out, and it immediately ran out of gas. So, Mr. Scully's getaway, not very successful, and it was foiled.
Awesome. Just awesome. Do you have another one, or are you...
Oh, you're asking for another story? See, the thing is...
Why would you do this?
Viewers, please... give us a little feedback on this segment. Obviously, Crohn's disease.
Here, let me
my part, but,
give you some feedback about this segment. Because it hurts my head.
Oh my gosh.
It causes me physical pain.
Okay, can I just move on to the third story?
Go right
Talking
ahead.
Talking about pain.
Ah!
Oh, Logan, are you there? Donut eating champ robs donut store. New York City man arrested after winning the 2014 donut contest. Donuts and arrest appear to be inextricably linked in the life of North Carolina man Bradley Hudson. The 27-year-old who was arrested in 2014 after he won the donut eating contest, helping himself to 42 donuts, has been charged with robbing a donut shop. Police in Elizabeth City say Hardinson, who became the champ by eating 42 glazed donuts in under 2 minutes, that is very impressive, has been charged with...
Congratulations to him!
...has been charged with offenses including felony breaking and entering and felony safe cracking in connection with a burglary at Dunkin' Donuts in November. Hardinson tried to rob the store of all of its donuts. Sad ending for Mr. Hardinson. Big decline there from going to being the world's donut-eating champion to trying to steal donuts from a store in the equivalent of 2 months.
And this is the portion of the podcast where everyone leaves.
Jackson, do you have anything of value to add to the show?
No.
See, honestly, I think I'm being attacked from my disease here. I think it's just because I have Crohn's disease.
No, you're getting attacked for your terrible segment.
Everyone, feedback. I know you love my segment, but we'll continue. We'll hit it next week.
All right. I'd just like to point out, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. So Case Keenum, Jameis Winston, and Blake Bortles must be clinical for throwing all those picks constantly.
Oh.
But I'd like to thank all of our listeners, all
yes.
three or four of them. Hi, Mom, for listening to this podcast. Obviously, we get it. We're small time. We're just starting up.
Spread the word.
But yes, please spread the word. We appreciate any feedback. We're just trying to get feedback. A feel for how we want this to go, how anybody out there wants Snapchat, this to go.
My Snapchat is jake.masek, all lowercase, jake.masek, all lowercase. Please send feedback to that.
I'm not going to give mine out. I'm embarrassed. Jackson, do you have anything?
No, yeah, just for the people listening, thank you for your support. We really do appreciate it. And like Logan said, please give us what we can work on and what you guys want to hear in our podcast, maybe more or less of Crohn's Disease Corner.
Yeah, but thanks for grinding with us. We'll try to do better later, and we will talk to you mañana.
Stay positive.
Crohn's Disease positive.
You know how it goes.